Thank you, Brad, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Whenever you come to talks like this, you've got to try and devise a title. Everyone says, what are you going to speak about? You know, what's the title? I thought Beyond the Bust enabled me to talk about just about anything in the future, but nonetheless, I'm delighted to be here. Let me say that notwithstanding the much-vaunted and possibly illusory green shoots, life is tough and uncertain at the moment. People are worried about their jobs, their investments, and their superannuation of lost value. For the foreseeable future, individuals and families will be focused on restoring their household balance sheets. And I suspect that's where a lot of the government's cash incentives have gone. Companies are grappling with a major downturn in trading conditions. Credit is difficult and likely to remain so for a while yet. As Brad said, the Qantas Group is certainly feeling the effects of this downturn, with a significant contraction, especially in premium travel. But like many companies, the group is working hard to match costs to lower revenues. While overall the group has reduced capacity in line with the reductions in demand, operations here in Western Australia have been pretty resilient, and we continue our robust support for the mining and energy operations in the Pilbara and the Kimberley. Today I don't want to dwell on the short-term impacts of the downturn. We all get plenty of that in the news each day. Instead, I'd like to look out beyond the current period, beyond the bust. This downturn won't last forever. Recovery will occur. However, we need to do a lot more than sit back and wait for the good times with our arms folded. For example, Qantas is looking to the future beyond the bust. While there are some deferrals of aircraft, Qantas continues to renew its fleet. The A380 has been a huge success with customers. Three are in service now and three more are to be delivered before the end of the year. We are well advanced with the redevelopment of Perth Airport, as was just described. So Qantas is looking ahead. As for Australia more broadly, our national productivity growth was already lagging in the latter parts of the boom. We were showing signs of falling behind. Over recent times, we've had one of the biggest immigration booms in our history, and that's little understood. But now is the time to translate that into a burst of productive energy and seize the opportunity to hit the ground running. As a trading nation, Australia's prosperity relies on our international competitiveness. The key for us must be a focus on productivity. We need to be much more efficient in both our public and private sectors so that we can produce more, innovate faster, and at a lower cost. We need skilled people across the board. And the good news is that relative to other OECD economies, Australia is well placed. We were fortunate to enter this downturn with a strong banking system, a strong export ties to Asia, China and Japan particularly, and a national budget surplus. The picture around the world, however, is not so rosy. While I have a feeling that the worst may be over in the US, there are still some challenging times ahead. The big global banks are recapitalising, but I suspect the smaller banks, and you saw, I think it was in the Fin Review this morning, will be exposed to the impact of commercial real estate downturn. There's no one-size-fits-all analysis, and that applies to Europe in particular. It varies tremendously. The Mediterranean economies of Italy, Spain, Portugal and Greece would once devalue and inflate their way out of the recession. Life's a little more difficult now, for these economies are in the Eurozone. Spain and Portugal in particular have enormous exposure to property. Elsewhere, Germany has a big dependence on export, and I noticed some statistics this morning that were encouraging, and it's particularly related to the former exposure to the former Eastern Bloc, which, as we know, has its own challenges. The UK is a real concern. London is hugely affected by the financial services crash. The country has a huge budget deficit, and daily we read of the political paralysis. Given these variations, I sense that the current push for an overarching European-wide banking regulation may be a bit optimistic. It seems more likely to me that the different European economies will manage their issues in their own way. Undoubtedly, there'll be some broader overall supervision changes, but, well, let's see what happens. Closer to us, Japan, like Germany, is heavily dependent on exports and confronts the enormous challenge of its aging population. Then there's China. Fundamentally a different story, where the flywheel is up and spinning and continuing investment is providing sustained economic momentum for them and for us too. I'm hearing encouraging anecdotal evidence regarding growth in China. Good news for Western Australia in particular. At home, I'm pleased that the federal government has committed itself to an array of quality infrastructure projects. Sure, there'll be some inefficiencies, but the benefits will be widespread. This should help us construct the transport and communication infrastructure we need to support productivity growth. But many of these are very long-run projects, and it won't be long before the size of the budget deficit becomes a problem for the government and therefore for every Australian. So it's going to be very important to ensure there is private sector investment in infrastructure as well. At some point, the baton is going to have to be passed to the private sector. I think it's important that the government is open to ways to partner with the private sector to deliver on our infrastructure needs. Taxation incentives and other measures are necessary to encourage the long-run private investment essential to major projects. The government must encourage private funding, not replace it with money borrowed on the government account, leaving a greater debt for our children and grandchildren. On a different topic, the Business Council of Australia has made an important submission to Australia's future tax system review, the Henry Review. I have high hopes for this review, and it will require some real guts from government. As the editorial in the Financial Review said on June the 18th, every generation gets one chance at improving the tax competitiveness. We can't afford for the Rudd government to fluff this one. I think that really encapsulates our expectations. The BCA has called for major steps to reform Australia's tax system in line with the demographic, social, economic and environmental challenges of the 21st century. In arguing for a halving of Australia's corporate tax rate to 15%, Greg Gailey, the president, said, Our biggest growth opportunity will come from attracting a larger share of scarce global investment capital. This is undoubtedly true. It sounds like a big call in these difficult times, but I think we must think beyond the bust. And I can certainly attest to the impact of our corporate tax rates on our aviation competitiveness. Singapore Airlines pays 18% corporate tax, Cathay 17.5%, and the Emirates and Etihad, none at all. We are at a considerable disadvantage. The BCA has also been pushing hard for better nationwide regulation, not more regulation. The overlap and duplication between federal and state governments, and indeed local governments, is a major impost and a drain on national energy. The Council of Australian Governments has been talking about this issue, only last week, I think, or maybe earlier this week. But because of the focus on responding to the global financial crisis in recent months, I suspect this item has slipped down the agenda. However, I hope not, as it will. We need real action here. On a separate issue, here in Western Australia, it still takes too long to get approvals for new mining developments and associated facilities. The boost to national productivity by rational improvements of this kind will be enormous. Let me now turn to the Australian industries of the future. In fact, I believe they will look very much like the great Australian industries of today. But we will have to keep working hard to stay globally competitive. Top of the list is our resources of minerals, oil and gas, which are so vital to Western Australia and the Australian economy as a whole. Our mining industry remains one of our nation's great competitive advantages. And I don't really need to say that in Western Australia. Australia is one of the world's most important sources of key commodities. The biggest provider of coal, second for iron ore, gold and zinc, third for copper and fifth for aluminium. Over many years, we have developed the people, skills and technology to effectively exploit these natural resources. We've also created the legal and institutional frameworks within which our natural resource companies can operate efficiently and prosper. We've created an environment where international players can invest with confidence. We can do more, but political stability counts for a lot. Australians have been able to play a leading role in the development of mining globally, but further expansion of the mining sector requires major infrastructure upgrades and new facilities. And I believe this is best left to companies. But governments have a role to play in this work through the taxes, the charges, the depreciation regimes and other influences they have, as I mentioned earlier. Then we have other key areas of national strength. Education services is one. Our biggest services export is education services, worth nearly $13 billion in 2007. And every year we educate over 400,000 foreign students. But the recent furor over the series of attacks on Indian students in the East Coast is a reminder how quickly things can change. We can't assume Australia will always be seen as a safe and desirable destination. We have to keep working at it. Unfortunately, that matter gained widespread coverage overseas. I read of it when I was in the UK a couple of weeks back. Agriculture will remain important and medical services will increase in value. Tourism is also a very important opportunity, especially because it offers great potential for small to medium enterprises in regional, rural and remote Australia. While we're a safe destination, we have lost our way on tourism in recent times and certainly lost our relative position in the ranks of world tourism destinations. The future for all these industries depends on the skills of the people within them. To take one example, a generation of engineers and accountants is aging. In the short term, that may not be a huge problem. Indeed, I imagine some professionals are reconsidering their early retirement plans with the impact of the downturn on their super. But there is a major skills shortage looming over the longer term. The solution may require more skilled immigration, and we shouldn't be afraid of that. Meanwhile, we should do everything we can to encourage students with aptitude and interest to enter university and study science and math-based subjects. If that means more places for fee-paying students, then so be it. Opposition will be short-sighted. We need more and more highly trained teachers in the fundamental subjects of math, physics, chemistry and so on. We have to make it attractive for them. Another big factor affecting national productivity is how we will, as a nation, contribute to minimising the production of greenhouse gases. And this is very complex. The government's scheme of emissions trading that is being presented to Parliament at the moment has theoretical benefits and has the merit of a market-based approach to the problem. However, once commenced, the intricate valuing, trading and system management that it requires will come at a cost, and that cost will be passed to the consumer. It's also likely to have some unintended consequences. To give just one example from an aviation industry perspective, domestic flying will be taxed and international flying will be exempt. At a time when we're trying to boost domestic tourism, a trip from Perth to Bali will improve in value, depending on the cost of the carbon impost, will improve in value compared to, say, Perth to the Gold Coast or Melbourne. My personal feeling, and you've probably heard me before, is that it will be better to have the certainty provided by a carbon tax, easier to implement, simpler for everyone to manage, and much more flexible. The tax could be targeted quite specifically and raised or lowered as its impact is assessed. And as an offset, some have suggested personal taxes could be lowered. However, as I said before on this matter, the debate has moved on, although I'd have to say I can't remember the debate even taking place. So in conclusion, Australia has entered this very difficult economic period with the benefit of a significant surplus, a strong banking system. And notwithstanding the challenges of our budget deficit, we have the opportunity to come out of it in better shape than most economies. This won't happen without some strong action in the short term. So let's focus on getting the private sector into infrastructure development, reforming the tax system, cutting the red tape between the Commonwealth, the states and local government, and building the skills we need for the great Australian industries of the future. And by the way, whenever you get the opportunity, fly Qantas. Thank you very much.